One hour after nightfall, Silence packed her rucksack by the light of the hearth. Her grandmother had kindled that hearth's flame, and it had been burning ever since. She'd nearly lost her life lighting the fire, but she hadn't been willing to pay any of the fire merchants for a start. Silence shook her head. Grandmother always had bucked convention, but then was Silence any better? Don't kindle flame. Don't shed the blood of another. Don't run at night. These things draw shades. The simple rules by which every homesteader lived. She'd broken all three on more than one occasion. It was a wonder she hadn't been withered away into a shade by now. The fire's warmth seemed a distant thing as she prepared to kill. Silence glanced at the old shrine, really just a closet, that she kept locked. The flames reminded her of her grandmother. At times she thought of the fire as her grandmother, defiant of both the shades and the forts, right until the end. She'd purged the waystop of other reminders of grandmother, all save the shrine to the god beyond. That was set behind a locked door beside the pantry, and next to the door had once hung her grandmother's silver dagger, symbol of the old religion. That dagger was etched with the symbols of divinity as a warding. Silence now carried it in a sheath at her side, not for its wardings, but because it was silver. One could never have too much silver in the forests. She packed the sack carefully, first putting in her medicine kit and then a good-sized pouch of silver dust to heal withering. She followed that with 10 empty sacks of thick burlap, tarred on the inside to prevent their contents from leaking. Finally, she added an oil lamp. She wouldn't want to use it as she didn't trust fire. Fire could draw shades. However, she'd found it useful to have on prior outings, so she brought it. She'd only light it if she came across someone who already had a fire started. Once done, she hesitated, then went to the old storage room. She removed the floorboards and took out the small, dry-packed keg that lay beside the poisons. Gunpowder. Mother? William Ann asked, causing her to jump. She hadn't heard the girl enter the kitchen. Silence nearly dropped the keg in her startlement, and that nearly stopped her heart. She cursed herself for a fool, tucking the keg under her arm. It couldn't explode without fire. She knew that much. Mother, William Ann said, looking at the keg. I probably won't need it. But I know. Hush. She walked over and placed the keg into her sack. Attached to the side of the keg, with cloth stuffed between the metal arms, was her grandmother's fire starter. Igniting gunpowder counted as kindling flames, at least in the eyes of the shades. It drew them almost as quickly as blood did, day or night. The early refugees from homeland had discovered that in short order. In some ways, blood was easier to avoid. A simple nosebleed or issue of blood wouldn't draw the shades. They wouldn't even notice. It had to be the blood of another shed by your hands, and they would go for the one who shed the blood first. Of course, after that person was dead, they often didn't care who they killed next. Once enraged, shades were dangerous to all nearby. Only after Silence had the gunpowder packed did she notice that William Ann was dressed for traveling in trousers and boots. She carried a sack, like Silence's. What do you think you're about, William Ann? Silence asked. You intend to kill 5 men who had only half a dose of fenweed by yourself, Mother?
I've done similar before. I've learned to work on my own.
Only because you didn't have anyone else to help. William Ann slung her sack onto her shoulder. That's no longer the case.
You're too young. Go back to bed. Watch the waystop until I return.
William Ann showed no signs of budging.
Child, I told you.
Mother, William Ann said, taking her arm firmly. You aren't a youth anymore. You think I don't see your limp getting worse? You can't do everything by yourself. You're going to have to start letting me help you sometime, damn it. Silence regarded her daughter. Where had that fierceness come from?
It was hard to remember that William Ann, too, was Four Scout stock. Grandmother would have been disgusted by her, and that made Silence proud. William Ann had actually had a childhood. She wasn't weak, she was just normal. A woman could be strong without having the emotions of a brick. "Don't you cuss at your mother," Silence finally told the girl. William Ann raised an eyebrow. "You may come," Silence said, prying her arm out of her daughter's grip. "But you will do as you are told." William Ann let out a deep breath, then nodded eagerly. "I'll warn Dob we're going." She walked out, adopting the natural slow step of a homesteader as she entered the darkness. Even though she was within the protection of the waystop's silver rings, she knew to follow the simple rules. Ignoring them when you were safe led to lapses when you weren't. Silence got out two bowls, then mixed two different types of glow paste. When finished, she poured them into separate jars, which she packed into her sack. She stepped outside into the night. The air was crisp, chill. The forests had gone silent. The shades were out, of course. A few of them moved across the grassy ground, visible by their own soft glow. Ethereal, translucent. The ones nearby right now were old shades. They barely had any human forms any longer. The heads rippled, faces shifting like smoke rings. They trailed waves of whiteness about an arm's length behind them. Silence had always imagined that as the tattered remains of their clothing. No woman, not even a Four Scout, looked upon shades without feeling a coldness inside of her. The shades were about during the day, of course. You just couldn't see them. Kindle fire, draw blood, and they'd come for you even then. At night, though, they were different, quicker to respond to infractions. At night, they also responded to rapid motions, which they never did during the day. Silence took out one of the glow paste jars, bathing the area around her in a pale green light. The light was dim, but was even and steady, unlike torchlight. Torches were unreliable since you couldn't relight them if they went out. William Ann waited at the front with the lantern poles. "We will need to move quietly," Silence told her while affixing the jars to the poles. "You may speak, but do so in a whisper. I said you will obey me. You will in all things, immediately. These men we're after, they will kill you or worse without giving the deed a passing thought." William Ann nodded. "You're not scared enough," Silence said, slipping a black covering around the jar with the brighter glow paste. That plunged them into darkness, but the star belt was high in the sky today. Some of that light would filter down through the leaves, particularly if they stayed near the road. William Ann began. "You remember when Harold's hound went mad last spring?" Silence asked. "Do you remember that look in the hound's eyes? No recognition? Eyes that lusted for the kill? Well, that's what these men are, William Ann. Rabid. They need to be put down, same as that hound. They won't see you as a person. They'll see you as meat. Do you understand?" William Ann nodded. Silence could see that she was still more excited than afraid, but there was no helping that. Silence handed William Ann the pole with the darker glow paste. It had a faint blue light to it, but didn't illuminate much. Silence put the other pole to her right shoulder, sack over her left, then nodded toward the roadway. Nearby, a shade drifted toward the boundary of the waystop. When it touched the thin barrier of silver on the ground, the silver crackled like sparks and drove the thing backward with a sudden jerk. The shade floated the other way. Each touch like that cost Silence money. The touch of a shade ruined silver. That was what her patrons paid for, a waystop whose boundary had not been broken in over 100 years, with a long-standing tradition that no unwanted shades were trapped within. Peace, of a sort, the best the forests offered. William Ann stepped across the boundary, which was marked by the curve of the large silver hoops jutting from the ground. They were anchored below by concrete, so you couldn't just pull one up. Replacing an overlapping section from one of the rings, she had three concentric ones surrounding her waist-up, required digging down and unchaining the section. It was a lot of work, which Silence knew intimately. A week didn't pass that they didn't rotate or replace one section or another. The shade nearby drifted away. It didn't acknowledge them. Silence didn't know if regular people were invisible to them unless the rules were broken, or if the people just weren't worthy of attention until then. She and William Ann moved out onto the dark roadway, which was somewhat overgrown. No road in the forests was well maintained. Perhaps if the forts ever made good on their promises, that would change. Still, there was travel. Homesteaders traveling to one fort or another to trade food. The grains grown out in forest clearings were richer, tastier than what could be produced up in the mountains. Rabbits and turkeys caught in snares or raised in hutches could be sold for good silver. Not hogs. Only someone in one of the forts would be so crass as to eat a pig. Anyway, there was trade, and that kept the roadway worn, even if the trees around did have a tendency to reach down their boughs, like grasping arms, to try to cover up the pathway, reclaim it. The forests did not like that people had infested them. The two women walked carefully and deliberately, no quick motions. Walking so, it seemed an eternity before something appeared on the road in front of them. "There," William Ann whispered. Silence released her tension in a breath. Something glowing blue marked the roadway in the light of the glow paste. Theopolis's guess at how she tracked her quarries had been a good one, but incomplete. Yes, the light of the paste, also known as Abraham's fire, did make drops of wet leek sap glow. By coincidence, wet leek sap also caused a horse's bladder to loosen. Silence inspected the line of glowing sap and urine on the ground. She'd been worried that Chesterton and his men would set off into the forests soon after leaving the way stop. That hadn't been likely, but still she'd worried. Now she was sure she had the trail. If Chesterton cut into the forests, he'd do it a few hours after leaving the way stop, to be more certain their cover was safe. She closed her eyes and breathed a sigh of relief, then found herself offering a prayer of thanks by rote. She hesitated. Where had that come from? It had been a long time. She shook her head, rising and continuing down the road. By drugging all five horses, she got a steady sequence of markings to follow. The forests felt dark this night. The light of the starbelt above didn't seem to filter through the branches as well as it should. And there seemed to be more shades than normal, prowling between the trunks of trees, glowing just faintly. William Ann clung to her lantern pole. The child had been out in the night before, of course. No homesteader looked forward to doing so, but none shied away from it either. You couldn't spend your life trapped inside, frozen by fear of the darkness. Live like that and, well, you were no better off than the people in the forts. Life in the forests was hard, often deadly, but it was also free.
Mother, William Ann whispered as they walked, why don't you believe in God anymore?
Is this really the time, girl?
William Ann looked down as they passed another line of urine, glowing blue on the roadway.
You always say something like that.
And I'm usually trying to avoid the question when you ask it, Silence said. But I'm also not usually walking the forests at night.
It just seems important to me now. You're wrong about me not being afraid enough. I can hardly breathe, but I do know how much trouble the waystop is in. You're always so angry after Master Theopolis visits. You don't change our border silver as often as you used to. One out of 2 days you don't eat anything but bread.
And you think this has to do with God? Why?
William Ann kept looking down.
Oh, shadows, Silence thought.
She thinks we're being punished. Fool girl. Foolish as her father. They passed the old bridge, walking its rickety wooden planks. When the light was better, you could still pick out timbers from the new bridge down in the chasm below, representing the promises of the forts and their gifts, which always looked pretty, but frayed before long. Sabruki's father had been one of those who had come put the old bridge back up.
I believe in the God beyond, Silence said, after they reached the other side.
But I don't worship, Silence said, but that doesn't mean I don't believe. The old books, they called this land the home of the damned. I doubt that worshiping does any good if you're already damned. That's all.
William Ann didn't reply. They walked another good 2 hours. Silence considered taking a shortcut through the woods, but the risk of losing the trail and having to double back felt too dangerous. Besides, those markings, glowing a soft blue-white in the unseen light of the glow paste, those were something real. A lifeline of light in the shadows all around. Those lines represented safety for her and her children. With both of them counting the moments between urine markings, they didn't miss the turnoff by much. A few minutes walking without seeing a mark, and they turned back without a word, searching the sides of the path. Silence had worried this would be the most difficult part of the hunt, but they easily found where the men had turned into the forests. A glowing hoofprint formed the sign. One of the horses had stepped in another's urine on the roadway, then tracked it into the forests. Silence set down her pack and opened it to retrieve her garrote, then held a finger to her lips and motioned for William Ann to wait by the road. The girl nodded. Silence couldn't make out much of her features in the darkness, but she did hear the girl's breathing grow more rapid. Being a homesteader and accustomed to going out at night was one thing. Being alone in the forests? Silence took the blue glow paste jar and covered it with her handkerchief. Then she took off her shoes and stockings and crept out into the night. Each time she did this, she felt like a child again, going into the forests with her grandfather. Toes in the dirt, testing for crackling leaves or twigs that would snap and give her away. She could almost hear his voice giving instructions, telling her how to judge the wind and use the sound of rustling leaves to mask her as she crossed noisy patches. He'd loved the forests until the day they'd claimed him.
Never call this land hell, he had said. Respect the land as you would a dangerous beast, but do not hate it.
Shades slid through the trees nearby, almost invisible with nothing to illuminate them. She kept her distance, but even so she occasionally turned to see one of the things drifting past her. Stumbling into a shade could kill you, but that kind of accident was uncommon. Unless enraged, shades moved away from people who got too close as if blown by a soft breeze. So long as you were moving slowly, and you should be, you would be all right. She kept the handkerchief around the jar except when she wanted to check specifically for any markings. Glow paste illuminated shades, and shades that glowed too brightly might give warning of her approach. A groan sounded nearby. Silence froze, heart practically bursting from her chest. Shades made no sound. That had been a man. Tense, silent, she searched until she caught sight of him, well hidden in the hollow of a tree. He moved, massaging his temples. The headaches from William Ann's poison were upon him. Silence considered, then crept around the back of the tree. She crouched down, then waited a painful 5 minutes for him to move. He reached up again, rustling the leaves. Silence snapped forward and looped her garrote around his neck, then pulled tight. Strangling wasn't the best way to kill a man in the forests. It was so slow. The guard started to thrash, clawing at his throat. Shades nearby halted. Silence pulled tighter. The guard, weakened by the poison, tried to kick at her with his legs. She shuffled backward, still holding tightly, watching those shades. They looked around like animals sniffing the air. A few of them started to dim, their own faint natural luminescence fading, their forms bleeding from white to black. Not a good sign. Silence felt her heartbeat like thunder inside. Die, damn you! The man finally stopped jerking, motions growing more lethargic. After he trembled one final time and fell still, Silence waited there for a painful eternity, holding her breath. Finally, the shades nearby faded back to white, then drifted off in their meandering directions. She unwound the garrote, breathing out in relief. After a moment to get her bearings, she left the corpse and crept back to William Ann. The girl did her proud. She'd hidden herself so well that Silence didn't see her until she whispered, "Mother?"
"Yes,"
Silence said. "Thank the God beyond," William Ann said, crawling out of the hollow where she'd covered herself in leaves. She took Silence by the arm, trembling. "You found them?"
"Killed the man on watch," Silence said with a nod. "The other four should be sleeping. This is where I'll need you."
"I'm ready."
"Follow."
They moved back along the path Silence had taken. They passed the heap of the lookout's corpse, and William Ann inspected it, showing no pity.
"It's one of them," she whispered. "I recognize him."
"Of course it's one of them."
"I just wanted to be sure, since we're, you know."
Not far beyond the guard post, they found the camp. Four men in bedrolls slept amid the shades as only true forest-born would ever try. They had set a small jar of glow paste at the center of the camp, inside a pit, so it wouldn't glow too brightly and give them away. But it was enough light to show the horses, tethered a few feet away on the other side of the camp. The green light also showed William Ann's face, and Silence was shocked to see not fear, but intense anger in the girl's expression. She had taken quickly to being a protective older sister to Sabruki. She was ready to kill after all. Silence gestured toward the rightmost man, and William Ann nodded. This was the dangerous part. On only a half dose, any of these men could still wake to the noise of their partners dying. Silence took one of the burlap sacks from her pack and handed it to William Ann, then removed her hammer. It wasn't some war weapon like her grandfather had spoken of, just a simple tool for pounding nails or other things. Silence stooped over the first man. Seeing his sleeping face sent a shiver through her. A primal piece of her waited, tense, for those eyes to snap open. She held up three fingers to William Ann, then lowered them one at a time. When the third finger went down, William Ann shoved the sack over the man's head. As he jerked, Silence pounded him hard on the side of the temple with the hammer. The skull cracked, and the head sank in a little. The man thrashed once, then grew limp. Silence looked up, tense, watching the other men as William Ann pulled the sack tight. The shades nearby paused, but this didn't draw their attention as much as the strangling had. So long as the sack's lining of tar kept the blood from leaking out, they should be safe. Silence hit the man's head twice more, then checked for a pulse. There was none. They carefully did the next man in the row. It was brutal work, like slaughtering animals. It helped to think of these men as rabid, as she'd told William Ann earlier. It did not help to think of what the men had done to Sabruki. That would make her angry, and she couldn't afford to be angry. She needed to be cold, quiet, and efficient. The second man took a few more knocks to the head to kill, but he woke more slowly than his friend. Fenweed made men groggy. It was an excellent drug for her purposes. She just needed them sleepy, a little disoriented. And the next man sat up in his bedroll.
"What?"
he asked in a slurred voice. Silence leapt for him, grabbing him by the shoulders and slamming him to the ground. Nearby shades spun about as if at a loud noise. Silence pulled her garrote out as the man heaved at her, trying to push her aside, and William Ann gasped in shock. Silence rolled around, wrapping the man's neck. She pulled tight, straining while the man thrashed, agitating the shades.
She almost had him dead when the last man leapt from his bedroll. In his dazed alarm, he chose to dash away. Shadows. That last one was Chesterton himself. If he drew the shades. Silence left the third man gasping and threw caution aside, racing after Chesterton. If the shades withered him to dust, she'd have nothing. No corpse to turn in meant no bounty. The shades around the campsite faded from view as Silence reached Chesterton, catching him at the perimeter of the camp by the horses. She desperately tackled him by the legs, throwing the groggy man to the ground.
"You bitch,"
he said in a slurred voice, kicking at her.
"You're the innkeeper. You poisoned me, you bitch."
In the forest, the shades had gone completely black. Green eyes burst alight as they opened their earth sight. The eyes trailed a misty light. Silence battered aside Chesterton's hands as he struggled.
"I'll pay you," he said, clawing at her. "I'll pay you."
Silence slammed her hammer into his arm, causing him to scream. Then she brought it down on his face with a crunch. She ripped off her sweater as he groaned and thrashed, somehow wrapping it around his head and the hammer.
"Will you, man?" she screamed. "I need a bag. A bag, girl, give me."
William Ann knelt beside her, pulling a sack over Chesterton's head as the blood soaked through the sweater. Silence reached to the side with a frantic hand and grabbed a stone, then smashed it into the sack-covered head. The sweater muffled Chesterton's screams, but also muffled the rock. She had to beat again and again. He finally fell still. William Ann held the sack against his neck to keep the blood from flowing out, her breath coming in quick gasps.
"Oh God, beyond. Oh God."
Silence dared look up. Dozens of green eyes hung in the forest, glowing like little fires in the blackness. William Ann squeezed her eyes shut and whispered a prayer, tears leaking down her cheeks. Silence reached slowly to her side and took out her silver dagger. She remembered another night. Another sea of glowing green eyes. Her grandmother's last night. Run, girl. Run. That night, running had been an option. They'd been close to safety. Even then, grandmother hadn't made it. She might have, but she hadn't. That night horrified Silence. What grandmother had done. What Silence had done. Well, tonight she had only one hope. Running would not save them. Safety was too far away. Slowly, blessedly, the eyes started to fade away. Silence sat back and let the silver knife slip out of her fingers to the ground. William Ann opened her eyes.
"Oh God, beyond," she said as the shades faded back into view. "A miracle."
"Not a miracle," Silence said. "Just luck. We killed him in time. Another second and they'd have enraged." William Ann wrapped her arms around herself.
"Oh, shadows. Oh, shadows. I thought we were dead. Oh, shadows."
Suddenly, Silence remembered something. The third man. She hadn't finished strangling him before Chesterton ran. She stumbled to her feet, turning. He lay there, immobile.
"I finished him off," William Ann said. "Had to strangle him with my hands. My hands."
Silence glanced back at her.
"You did well, girl. You probably saved our lives. If you hadn't been here, I'd never have killed Chesterton without enraging the shades."
The girl still stared out into the woods, watching the placid shades.
"What would it take," she asked, "for you to see a miracle instead of a coincidence?"
"It would take a miracle, obviously," Silence said, picking up her knife. "Instead of just a coincidence. Come on. Let's put a second sack on these fellows."
William Ann joined her, lethargic as she helped put sacks on the heads of the bandits. Two sacks each, just in case. Blood was the most dangerous. Running drew shades, but slowly. Fire enraged them immediately, but it also blinded and confused them. Blood, though. Blood shed in anger exposed to the open air. A single drop could make the shades slaughter you and then everything else within their sight. Silence checked each man for a heartbeat, just in case, and found none. They saddled the horses and heaved the corpses, including the lookout, into the saddles and tied them in place. They took the bedrolls and other equipment, too. Hopefully the men would have some silver on them. Bounty laws let Silence keep what she found, unless there was specific mention of something stolen. In this case, the forts just wanted Chesterton dead. Pretty much everyone did. Silence pulled a rope tight, then paused.
Mother,
William Ann said, noticing the same thing. Leaves rustling out in the forests. They'd uncovered their jar of green glow paste to join that of the bandits, so the small campsite was well illuminated as a gang of 8 men and women on horseback rode in through the forests. They were from the forts. The nice clothing, the way they kept looking into the forests at the shades. Fort folk for certain. Silence stepped forward, wishing she had her hammer to look at least a little threatening. That was still tied in the sack around Chesterton's head. It would have blood on it, so she couldn't get it out until that dried or she was in some place very, very safe.
Now look at this, said the man at the front of the newcomers. I couldn't believe what Tobias told me when he came back from scouting, but it appears to be true. All 5 men in Chesterton's gang. Killed by a couple of forest homesteaders?
Who are you? Silence asked.
Red Young, the man said with the tip of a hat. I've been tracking this lot for the last 4 months. I can't thank you enough for taking care of them for me.
He waved to a few of his people, who dismounted.
Mother,
William Ann hissed. Silence studied Red's eyes. He was armed with a cudgel, and one of the women behind him had one of those new crossbows with the blunt tips. They cranked fast and hit hard, but didn't draw blood.
Step away from the horses, child, Silence said.
But step away. Silence dropped the rope of the horse she was leading. 3 Fort City people gathered up the ropes, one of the men leering at William Ann.
You're a smart one, Red said, leaning down and studying Silence.
One of his women walked past, towing Chesterton's horse with the man's corpse slumped over the saddle. Silence stepped up, resting a hand on Chesterton's saddle. The woman towing it paused, then looked at her boss. Silence slipped her knife from its sheath.
You'll give us something, Silence said to Red, knife hand hidden. After what we did. 1/4, and I don't say a word. Sure, he said, tipping his hat to her.
He had a fake kind of grin, like one in a painting.
1/4 it is.
Silence nodded. She slipped the knife against one of the thin ropes that held Chesterton in the saddle. That gave her a good cut on it as the woman pulled the horse away. Silence stepped back, resting her hand on William Ann's shoulder, while covertly moving the knife back into its sheath. Red tipped his hat to her again. In moments, the bounty hunters had retreated back through the trees toward the roadway.
1/4? William Ann hissed. You think he'll pay it?
Hardly, Silence said, picking up her pack.
We're lucky he didn't just kill us. Come on.
She moved out into the forests. William Ann walked with her, both moving with the careful steps the forests demanded.
It might be time for you to return to the way stop, William Ann.
And what are you going to do?
Get our bounty back.
She was a fore scout, damn it. No prim fort man was going to steal from her.
You mean to cut them off at the White Span, I assume. But what will you do? We can't fight so many, Mother.
I'll find a way.
That corpse meant freedom, life, for her daughters. She would not let it slip away like smoke between the fingers. They entered the darkness, passing shades that had just a short time before been almost ready to wither them. Now the shades drifted away, completely indifferent toward their flesh.
Think, Silence,
Something is very wrong here. How had those men found the camp?
The light? Had they overheard her and William Ann talking?
They'd claimed to have been chasing Chesterton for months.
Shouldn't she have caught wind of them before now?
These men and women look too crisp to have been out in the forests for months trailing killers. It led to a conclusion she did not want to admit. One man had known she was hunting a bounty today, and had seen how she was planning to track that bounty. One man had cause to see that bounty stolen from her.
Theopolis, I hope I'm wrong, she thought, because if you're behind this...
Silence and William Ann trudged through the guts of the forest, a place where the gluttonous canopy above drank in all of the light, leaving the ground below barren. Shades patrolled these wooden halls like blind sentries. Red and his bounty hunters were of the forts. They would keep to the roadways, and that was her advantage. The forests were no friend to a homesteader. No more than a familiar chasm was any less dangerous a drop. But Silence was a sailor on this abyss. She could ride its winds better than any fort dweller. Perhaps it was time to make a storm. What homesteaders called the White Span was a section of roadway lined by mushroom fields. It took about an hour through the forests to reach the span, and Silence was feeling the price of a night without sleep by the time she arrived. She ignored the fatigue, tromping through the field of mushrooms, holding her jar of green light and giving an ill cast to trees and furrows in the land. The roadway bent around through the forests, then came back this way. If the men were heading toward Lastport or any of the other nearby forts, they would come this direction.
You continue on, Silence said to William Ann. It's only another hour's hike back to the waystop. Check on things there.
I'm not leaving you, Mother.
You promised to obey. Would you break your word?
And you promised to let me help you. Would you break yours?
I don't need you for this, Silence said. And it will be dangerous.
What are you going to do?
Silence stopped beside the roadway, then knelt, fishing in her pack. She came out with the small keg of gunpowder.
William Ann went as white as the mushrooms. Mother!
Silence untied her grandmother's fire starter. She didn't know for certain if it still worked. She'd never dared compress the two metal arms, which looked like tongs. Squeezing them together would grind the ends against one another, making sparks, and a spring at the joint would make them come back apart.
Silence looked at her daughter, then held the fire starter up beside her head.
William Ann stepped back, then glanced to the sides, toward nearby shades.
Are things really that bad? The girl whispered. For us, I mean.
Silence nodded.
All right, then.
Fool girl.
Well, Silence wouldn't send her away. The truth was, she probably would need help. She intended to get that corpse.
Bodies were heavy, and there wasn't any way she'd be able to cut off just the head. Not out in the forests, with shades about.
She dug into her pack, pulling out her medical supplies. They were tied between two small boards, intended to be used as splints. It was not difficult to tie the two boards to either side of the fire starter. With her hand trowel, she dug a small hole in the roadway's soft earth, about the size of the powder keg. She then opened the plug to the keg and set it into the hole. She soaked her handkerchief in the lamp oil, stuck one end in the keg, then positioned the fire starter boards on the road with the end of the kerchief next to the spark-making heads. After covering the contraption with some leaves, she had a rudimentary trap. If someone stepped on the top board, that would press it down and grind out sparks to light the kerchief. Hopefully. She couldn't afford to light the fire herself. The shades would come first for the one who made the fire.
What happens if they don't step on it?
William Ann asked.
Then we move it to another place on the road and try again, Silence said.
That could shed blood, you realize?
Silence didn't reply. If the trap was triggered by a footfall, the shades wouldn't see Silence as the one causing it.
They'd come first for the one who triggered the trap. But if blood was drawn, they would enrage. Soon after, it wouldn't matter who had caused it. All would be in danger. We have hours of darkness left, Silence said. Cover your glow paste. William Ann nodded, hastily putting the cover on her jar. Silence inspected her trap again, then took William Ann by the shoulder and pulled her to the side of the roadway. The underbrush was thicker there, as the road tended to wind through breaks in the canopy. People sought out places in the forests where they could see the sky. The bounty hunters came along eventually, silent, illuminated by a jar of glow paste each. Fort folk didn't talk at night. They passed the trap, which Silence had placed on the narrowest section of roadway. She held her breath, watching the horses pass, step after step, missing the lump that marked the board. William Ann covered her ears, hunkering down. A hoof hit the trap. Nothing happened. Silence released an annoyed breath. What would she do if the fire starter was broken? Could she find another way to... The explosion struck her, the wave of force shaking her body. Shades vanished in a blink, green eyes snapping open. Horses reared and whinnied, men and women yelling. Silence shook off her stupefaction, grabbing William Ann by the shoulder and pulling her out of hiding. Her trap had worked better than she'd assumed. The burning rag had allowed the horse who had triggered the trap to take a few steps before the blast hit. No blood, just a lot of surprised horses and confused people. The little keg of gunpowder hadn't done as much damage as she'd anticipated. The stories of what gunpowder could do were often as fanciful as stories of the homeland. But the sound had been incredible. Silence's ears rang as she fought through the confused fort folk, finding what she'd hoped to see. Chesterton's corpse lay on the ground, dumped from saddleback by a bucking horse and a frayed rope. She grabbed the corpse under the arms, and William Ann took the legs. They moved sideways into the forests.
Idiots! Red bellowed from amid the confusion. Stop her! It...
He cut off as shades swarmed the roadway, descending upon the men. Red had managed to keep his horse under control, but now he had to dance it back from the shades. Enraged, they had turned pure black, though the blast of light and fire had obviously left them dazed. They fluttered about like moths at a flame. Green eyes, a small blessing. If those turned red... One bounty hunter standing on the road and spinning about was struck. His back arched, black-veined tendrils crisscrossing his skin. He dropped to his knees, screaming as the flesh of his face shrank around his skull. Silence turned away. William Ann watched the fallen man with a horrified expression.
Slowly, child, Silence said in what she hoped was a comforting voice. She hardly felt comforting. Carefully. We can move away from them. William Ann, look at me.
The girl turned to look at her.
Hold my eyes. Move. That's right. Remember, the shades will go to the source of the fire first. They are confused, stunned. They can't smell fire like they do blood, and they'll look from it to the nearest rapid motion. Slowly. Easily. Let the scrambling fort folk distract them.
The two of them eased into the forests with excruciating deliberateness. In the face of so much chaos, so much danger, their pace felt like a crawl. Red organized a resistance. Fire-crazed shades could be fought, destroyed, with silver. More and more would come, but if the bounty hunters were clever and lucky, they'd be able to destroy those nearby and then move slowly away from the source of the fire. They could hide, survive, maybe. Unless one of them accidentally drew blood. Silence and William Ann stepped through a field of mushrooms that glowed like the skulls of rats and broke silently beneath their feet. Luck was not completely with them, for as the shades shook off their disorientation from the explosion,
A pair of them on the outskirts turned and struck out toward the fleeing women.
William Ann gasped.
Silence deliberately set down Chesterton's shoulders, then took out her knife.
"Keep going," she whispered. "Pull him away. Slowly, girl. Slowly."
"I won't leave you."
"I will catch up," Silence said. "You aren't ready for this."
She didn't look to see if William Ann obeyed, for the shades, figures of jet black streaking across the white-knobbed ground, were upon her. Strength was meaningless against shades. They had no real substance. Only two things mattered: your speed and not letting yourself be frightened. Shades were dangerous, but so long as you had silver, you could fight. Many a man died because he ran, drawing even more shades, rather than standing his ground. Silence swung at the shades as they reached her.
"You want my daughter hellbound?" she thought with a snarl. "You should have tried for the fort folk instead."
She swept her knife through the first shade as grandmother had taught.
"Never creep back and cower before shades. You're Forescout blood. You claim the forests. You are their creature as much as any other, as am I."
Her knife passed through the shade with a slight tugging feeling, creating a shower of bright white sparks that sprayed out of the shade. The shade pulled back, its black tendrils writhing about one another. Silence spun on the other. The pitch sky let her see only the thing's eyes, a horrid green, as it reached for her. She lunged. Its spectral hands were upon her, the icy cold of its fingers gripping her arm below the elbow. She could feel it. Shade fingers had substance. They could grab you, hold you back. Only silver warded them away. Only with silver could you fight. She rammed her arm in farther. Sparks shot out its back, spraying like a bucket of wash water. Silence gasped at the horrid, icy pain. Her knife slipped from fingers she could no longer feel. She lurched forward, falling to her knees as the second shade fell backward, then began spinning about in a mad spiral. The first one flopped on the ground like a dying fish, trying to rise, its top half falling over. The cold of her arm was so bitter. She stared at the wounded arm, watching the flesh of her hand wither upon itself, pulling in toward the bone. She heard weeping.
"You stand there, Silence."
Grandmother's voice. Memories of the first time she'd killed a shade.
"You do as I say. No tears. Forescouts don't cry. Forescouts don't cry."
She had learned to hate her that day. 10 years old, with her little knife, shivering and weeping in the night as her grandmother had enclosed her and a drifting shade in a ring of silver dust. Grandmother had run around the perimeter, enraging it with motion, while Silence was trapped in there, with death.
"The only way to learn is to do, Silence. And you'll learn, one way or another."
"Mother,"
William Ann said. Silence blinked, coming out of the memory as her daughter dumped silver dust on the exposed arm. The withering stopped, as William Ann, choking against her thick tears, dumped the entire pouch of emergency silver over the hand. The metal reversed the withering and the skin turned pink again, the blackness melting away in sparks of white.
"Too much," Silence thought.
William Ann had used all of the silver dust in her haste, far more than one wound needed. It was difficult to summon any anger, for feeling flooded back into her hand and the icy cold retreated.
"Mother,"
William Ann asked.
"I left you as you said, but he was so heavy I didn't get far. I came back for you. I'm sorry. I came back for you."
"Thank you," Silence said, breathing in. "You did well."
She reached up and took her daughter by the shoulder, then used the once withered hand to search in the grass for grandmother's knife. When she brought it up, the blade was blackened in several places, but still good. Back on the road, the fort folk had made a circle and were holding off the shades with silver-tipped spears. The horses had all fled or been consumed. Silence fished on the ground, coming up with a small handful of silver dust. The rest had been expended in the healing. Too much. No use worrying about that now, she thought, stuffing the handful of dust in her pocket. Come, she said, hauling herself to her feet. I'm sorry I never taught you to fight them.
Yes, you did, William Ann said, wiping her tears. You've told me all about it.
Told, never shown. Shadows, grandmother. I know I disappoint you, but I won't do it to her. I can't. But I am a good mother. I will protect them. The two left the mushrooms, taking up their grisly prize again and tromping through the forests. They passed more darkened shades floating toward the fight. All of those sparks would draw them. The fort folk were dead. Too much attention, too much struggle. They'd have 1,000 shades upon them before the hour was out. Silence and William Ann moved slowly. Though the cold had mostly retreated from Silence's hand, there was a lingering something, a deep shiver. A limb touched by the shades wouldn't feel right for months. That was far better than what could have happened. Without William Ann's quick thinking, Silence could have become a cripple. Once the withering settled in, that took a little time, though it varied. It was irreversible. Something rustled in the woods. Silence froze, causing William Ann to stop and glance about.
Mother? William Ann whispered.
Silence frowned. The night was so black, and they'd been forced to leave their lights. Something's out there, she thought, trying to pierce the darkness. What are you? God beyond protect them, if the fighting had drawn one of the deepest ones. The sound did not repeat. Reluctantly, Silence continued on. They walked for a good hour, and in the darkness Silence hadn't realized they'd neared the roadway again until they stepped onto it. Silence heaved out a breath, setting down their burden and rolling her tired arms in their joints. Some light from the star belt filtered down upon them, illuminating something like a large jawbone to their left. The old bridge. They were almost home. The shades here weren't even agitated. They moved with their lazy, almost butterfly gaits. Her arms felt so sore. That body felt as if it were getting heavier every moment. People often didn't realize how heavy a corpse was. Silence sat down. They'd rest for a time before continuing on. William Ann, do you have any water left in your canteen? William Ann whimpered. Silence started, then scrambled to her feet. Her daughter stood beside the bridge, and something dark stood behind her. A green glow suddenly illuminated the night as the figure took out a small vial of glow paste. By that sickly light, Silence could see that the figure was red. He held a dagger to William Ann's neck. The fort man had not fared well in the fighting. One eye was now a milky white, half his face blackened, his lips pulled back from his teeth. A shade had gotten him across the face. He was lucky to be alive.
I figured you'd come back this way, he said,
the words slurred by his shriveled lips. Spittle dripped from his chin.
Silver. Give me your silver.
His knife. It was common steel.
No!
He roared, pulling the knife closer to William Ann's neck. If he so much as nicked her, the shades would be upon them in heartbeats. I only have the knife, Silence lied, taking it out and tossing it to the ground before him. It's too late for your face, Red. That withering has set in.
I don't care,
he hissed.
Now the body. Step away from it, woman. Away.
Silence stepped to the side. Could she get to him before he killed William Ann? He'd have to grab that knife. If she sprang just right.
You killed my crew,
Red growled.
They're dead, all of them. God, if I hadn't rolled into the hollow, I had to listen to it. Listen to them being slaughtered.
You were the only smart one, she said. You couldn't have saved them, Red.
Bitch, you killed them.
They killed themselves, she whispered. You come to my forests,
Take what is mine. It was your crew or my children, Red.
Well, if you want your child to live through this, you'll stay very still. Girl, pick up that knife.
Whimpering, William Ann knelt. Red mimicked her, staying just behind her, watching Silence, holding the knife steady. William Ann picked up the knife in trembling hands. Red pulled the silver knife from William Ann, then held it in one hand, the common knife at her neck in the other.
Now the girl is going to carry the corpse, and you're going to wait right there. I don't want you coming near.
Of course, Silence said, already planning. She couldn't afford to strike right now. He was too careful. She would follow through the forests, along the road, and wait for a moment of weakness. Then she'd strike. Red spat to the side. Then a padded crossbow bolt shot from the night and took him in the shoulder. His blade slid across William Ann's neck, and a dribble of blood ran down it. The girl's eyes widened in horror, though it was little more than a nick. The danger to her throat wasn't important. The blood was. Red tumbled back, gasping, hand to his shoulder. A few drops of blood glistened on his knife. The shades in the forests around them went black. Glowing green eyes burst alight, then deepened to crimson. Red eyes in the night, blood in the air.
Oh, hell!
Red screamed.
Oh, hell!
Red eyes swarmed around him. There was no hesitation here, no confusion. They went straight for the one who had drawn blood. Silence reached for William Ann as the shades descended. Red grabbed the girl and shoved her through a shade, trying to stop it. He spun and dashed the other direction. William Ann passed through the shade, her face withering, skin pulling in at the chin and around the eyes. She stumbled through the shade and into Silence's arms. Silence felt an immediate, overwhelming panic.
No! Child, no! No! No!
William Ann worked her mouth, making a choking sound, her lips pulling back toward her teeth, her eyes open wide as her skin tightened and her eyelids shriveled.
Silver. I need silver. I can save her.
Silence snapped her head up, clutching William Ann. Red ran down the roadway, slashing the silver dagger all about, spraying light and sparks. Shades surrounded him, hundreds, like ravens flocking to a roost.
Not that way.
The shades would finish with him soon and would look for flesh, any flesh. William Ann still had blood on her neck. They'd come for her next. Even without that, the girl was withering fast. The dagger wouldn't be enough to save William Ann. Silence needed dust, silver dust, to force down her daughter's throat. Silence fumbled in her pocket, coming out with the small bit of silver dust there.
Too little.
She knew that would be too little. Her grandmother's training calmed her mind and everything became immediately clear. The way stop was close. She had more silver there.
Mother!
Silence heaved William Ann into her arms.
Too light, the flesh drying.
Then she turned and ran with everything she had across the bridge. Her arms stung, weakened from having hauled the corpse so far.
The corpse. She couldn't lose it.
No, she couldn't think on that. The shades would have it, as warm enough flesh, soon after Red was gone. There would be no bounty. She had to focus on William Ann. Silence's tears felt cold on her face as she ran, wind blowing her. Her daughter trembled and shook in her arms, spasming as she died. She'd become a shade if she died like this.
I won't lose you, Silence said into the night. Please. I won't lose you.
Behind her, Red screamed a long, wailing screech of agony that cut off at the end as the shades feasted. Near her, other shades stopped, eyes deepening to red.
Blood in the air, eyes of crimson. I hate you,
Silence whispered into the air as she ran. Each step was agony. She was growing old.
I hate you, what you did to me. What you did to us.
She didn't know if she was speaking to grandmother or the god beyond. So often they were the same in her mind. Had she ever realized that before? Branches lashed at her as she pushed forward. Was that light ahead, the way stop? Hundreds upon hundreds of red eyes opened in front of her. She stumbled to the ground, spent. William Ann like a heavy bundle of branches in her arms. The girl trembled. Her eyes rolled back in her head. Silence held out the small bit of silver dust she'd recovered earlier. She longed to pour it on William Ann, save her a little pain, but she knew with clarity that was a waste. She looked down, crying, then took the dust and made a small circle around the two of them. What else could she do? William Ann shook with a seizure as she rasped, drawing in breaths and clawing at Silence's arms. The shades came by the dozens, huddling around the two of them, smelling the blood, the flesh. Silence pulled her daughter close. She should have gone for the knife after all. It wouldn't heal William Ann, but she could have at least fought with it. Without that, without anything, she failed. Grandmother had been right all along. "Hush now, my dear one," Silence whispered, squeezing her eyes shut. "Be not afraid." Shades came at her frail barrier, throwing up sparks, making Silence open her eyes. They backed away, then others came, beating against the silver, their red eyes illuminating writhing black forms. "Night comes upon us," Silence whispered, choking at the words. "But sunlight will break." William Ann arched her back, then fell still. "Sleep now, my dear one. Let your tears fade. Darkness surrounds us, but someday we'll wake." "So tired. I shouldn't have let her come." If she hadn't, Chesterton would have gotten away from her, and she'd have probably fallen to the shades then. William Ann and Sabruki would have become slaves to Theopolis. Or worse. No choices. No way out.
"Why did you send us here?"
she screamed, looking up past hundreds of glowing red eyes.
"What is the point?"
There was no answer. There was never an answer.
Yes, that was light ahead. She could see it through the low tree branches in front of her. She was only a few yards from the way stop. She would die like grandmother had, mere paces from her home. She blinked, cradling William Ann as the tiny silver barrier failed.
That branch just in front of her, it had such a very odd shape. Long, thin, no leaves, not like a branch at all. Instead, like a crossbow bolt. It had lodged into the tree after being fired from the waystop earlier in the day. She remembered facing down that bolt earlier, staring at its reflective end. Silver.